So we've begun to look at this chapter, Romans chapter 13, and we've said that the first seven verses, the verses we looked at last week, are about our relationship with the state. There are certain powers that God has put there, they're over us, and we have to have a right relationship with them. We have to be submissive and obedient. And this week I want us to concentrate on verse 8, 9 and 10, which is about our relationship with the law. There are other verses in this chapter, verse 11 forward then, that talk about our relationship really with the fact that there's a second coming of Christ. God willing, we'll talk about that next time. But tonight, just verse 8, 9 and 10 on our relationship with the law. And the link here is really verse 7, because what verse 7 does, it's sort of rounds off what we have in those first seven verses and leads us then into the next bit, the bit that we're going to look at tonight. If you look at verse 7, you see it begins, "Give everyone what you owe him." So that's the sort of overall theme in those two verses, if you like. If you owe something to somebody, then you've got to pay it. So he talks about taxes, first of all. If you owe taxes, well, you must pay taxes. If you owe revenue, well, then you need to pay that revenue. If it's respect, then respect. If honour, then honour. And then as he sums it up, he says, "Let no debt remain outstanding." And he's obviously moved now from thinking about just the state, you know, the king or the queen or the emperor or the prime minister, the authorities of various sorts. He's moving away really from just thinking about that sort of more narrow sphere to the whole sphere of our relationships with different people. And he says, you mustn't owe anybody anything. You must give everyone what you owe him and let no debt remain outstanding. And that leads him to second statement in verse 8, except, of course, the continuing debt to love one another. And then he says, he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law, and he talks about the law at that point. So that's how he gets to this point. And so there are four things I want to say to you this evening. I hope it's very simple and very straightforward. I always hope that, but I think this is a particularly straightforward and easy part of Scripture. So let's see if that proves to be the case. First of all, hear this call to have no debt outstanding, but the debt to love one another. So hear this call to have no debt outstanding, but the debt to love one another. So first of all, let no debt remain outstanding. Having talked about paying taxes and so on, then he warns against owing anyone anything. And what the NIV does is to paraphrase here, it paraphrases as not letting any debt remain outstanding. And I think the reason they've done that is because you could read this, couldn't you? And you could think that Paul is saying that no Christian should ever borrow anything. That there was something wrong with borrowing. We know that stealing is wrong, there's no question about that. But maybe Paul is going further and saying, well, borrowing is just a form of stealing, that's all it is, and you must never borrow. Now, I think there's plenty of scriptural evidence to suggest that that can't be what he's saying, all the way from, remember the man who borrowed the axe? The head came off the axe. That's why it's mentioned, and it fell in the water. This is during the time of, I think it's Elisha, isn't it? Not Elijah, Elisha. And it sunk, but Elisha was able to rescue the axe head. He made it float. That particular passage of Scripture doesn't say anything about it being wrong to borrow. And even the Lord Jesus himself, of course, borrowed a donkey on which he rode into Jerusalem. And if you want to push it, I suppose even the grave where he remained. It was a short time, but it was a borrowed grave in one sense. So I don't think it's likely that Paul is saying that we should never borrow. Rather, his point is that if we do borrow, then we must be prompt to repay. So this is the point. If you borrow something, then you must be very careful to make sure you give it back in the time allotted. There are people out there who borrow large amounts of money. And there are people who are willing to lend it to them. There are people who will say, well, look, I'll let you borrow this large amount of money, providing you pay it back in the next 25 or 30 years, or maybe it's longer. I don't know much about this subject, to be honest, but that happens, doesn't it? We call it a mortgage. When somebody wants to buy a house, they're not very often in the position where they can just buy the house outright, but often they're in a position where they probably will be earning a sufficient figure over the next 25 or 35 years, where over that period they can pay with interest, and that's where the sting often is, the money that they need for that. I'm sure that borrowing is only allowed in certain limited circumstances, but I think it is acceptable. Some of you if you're a student, isn't it, student loans? I think that's an area, isn't it, where there's an understanding with the government. There are various provisos about this. I don't think it would be unwise for somebody who wanted to study for a number of years to borrow money from the government and to pay it back to them according to the principles that they laid down. I think you'd have to be careful, wouldn't you? I don't think you could say then, well, I can borrow any amount. I heard the pastor say it on Sunday. It doesn't matter how much you borrow. You can go right up to the hilt in debt, and there's not a problem. I'm not saying that. I think there must be some parameters here. So having said that, then Paul's remark really does, I think, encourage caution in those who borrow. I mean, we live in a society where it's pretty easy to borrow, isn't it? I'm sure, like me, you're constantly getting things through your letterbox and your email box, and they're saying, you know, borrow from us, borrow from us. We want you to borrow money. And there are lots of people who are very keen for you to borrow from them. We mustn't let the free availability of borrowing in our society work against us. We certainly mustn't be covetous, must we? And that's one thing that happens, isn't it? You get these adverts, don't they? You say, you can have it now for nothing. Pay nothing for the next 12 months, they say. I mean, that's the one that actually makes me think, pay nothing for 12 months. But then what you've got to think of is 12 months time, isn't it? Because then you're going to have to pay. So you haven't really, you know, and by then, whatever it is probably broken. It's not looking quite as good as when you bought it. So I think we need to be very careful with advertisements like that. I do wonder, really, if they perhaps, should be allowed or not. That's another question, really. So we need to be careful. Why are we borrowing money? We need to be careful, of course, who we borrow from. Because, of course, there are loan sharks, people who, they'll lend you money very, very readily, but the interest that they're charging is ridiculously high. And there are people who've got themselves into agreements where it's not even possible to pay off the loan, even if they work as hard as possible for years to come. So we should be cautious about who we borrow from and how much we borrow, and we should be as prompt as we can be to pay back. Obviously, if you're buying something like a house, it's reasonable to say, well, I won't be paying this all back until 30 years' time. It's going to take that long. I think that's realistic. But if you're buying some equipment for the house, and you still won't have paid it off in 10 years' time, I think you really need to look at that again and see if you're making a wise move. We must be prompt to pay back, and we must pay back as soon as we reasonably can. So that's the first lesson this evening. Be careful what debts you incur, and if you do incur debts, make sure you pay them off. I was thinking about an occasion a long, long time ago. There was a six-a-side tournament, and I was playing in goals. I remember, and I actually had some money with me, which is a rare thing in those days. Still a rare thing now, I think. But I had some money with me, and there was an ice cream van there. And everybody was queuing up, then it was a hot summer's day. I was queuing up to buy some ice cream. And this boy said to me, could I borrow some money to buy a lollipop. And I was a bit cautious. But I thought, well, okay, I've got a bit more than I actually need. I'll lend him the money. And he bought a lollipop with it. And I explained to my mother, who'd give me the money, what happened. And the next time I saw him, I asked him for the money back. And he said, oh, I haven't got it on me at the moment. He said, I will get it for you. And the next time I saw him, I asked him for the money back. And slowly, as time went by, I began to realise that he was using the word borrow in a slightly different way to the way I was using it. I'd understood up until that point that borrow meant, you know, you give money to somebody, they give it you back. Whereas his understanding of the whole subject. It's funny, actually, when I was last in my home church, he was there, actually. He's... I don't know if it's, I don't think he could, yes, oh, there we go. Well, I don't think he remembers the specific incident, but he knows he's indebted to me in some ways. He was always very nice to me and very, very kind. He's an older boy than me. So, you know, I'm sure none of you have got this false idea of borrowing that some people in Cumbrian seem to have picked up years ago. When you lend something, when you borrow something, then you must be ready to give it back. And you must set a time when you're going to give it back. And the sooner you give it back, the better. So that's the first thing, okay? Now, Paul's point is that we are not to let a debt remain outstanding. But he says, there is one debt that will always be outstanding. And that's why he says, except the continuing debt to love one another. We are always under obligation to love others. And it's a little bit like a debt that you just can't pay. It's never cancelled. Again, I was thinking about this and I was thinking back to my childhood. And I remember, I'd never remembered this before. When my father would buy a car, then he'd buy it by borrowing money. There'd be a loan. And my father was not one who talked about money very often at all, tended not to talk about money. But I was thinking about this, I'm sure I remember this correctly, that when he paid off the loan on the car, you know, you'd do it for 12 months or maybe 24 months, and eventually then it would be paid off. And my father was normally a jolly fellow, but he would have a particularly good spring in his step. And I think, I'm sure I'm not misremembering this, I'm sure he would even tell me, paid off the car today. And it was a great feeling. And it is, isn't it? If you've been involved in paying something off, I'm sure I remember when they finally paid off the mortgage as well. I remember him telling me about that. And that was a great feeling. That must be, I don't know if any of you are still paying mortgages. And it's a great moment, isn't it? You say, right, it's all paid for. It's mine. It's all paid for. It's a wonderful feeling. I made my last payment today. Great feeling. Now, when it comes to love, and I think it's one of the things that makes love difficult, that day, it doesn't really come. There's no day when you say, well, that's it, I've loved them as much as I need to. It's all paid, it's all done. You're under this continuous debt then to love. And I don't think Paul means to say it's a burden to love people. I don't think that's the point he's making. It's a sort of a burden. But if we delight to do God's will, then we'll be happy to love others and to love one another. And although it is a debt, we have to do it. There's no, it's not like we've got a choice in this matter. It must be paid. But we'll be delighted then to continue to pay. And we ought to feel an obligation then to love our neighbours and to love everyone we meet, isn't it? That ought to be our feeling. And that is exactly then how it should be. So hear this call then, first of all, to have no debt outstanding, but the debt to love one another. And then, following on from that, secondly, see the importance then of love one to the other. Paul goes on to make the point that he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law. I don't think he's suggesting it fulfills the law completely. He's not saying that, is he? But it's going in the right direction. That's the sort of thing. When we talk about keeping the law, we're talking about the law of love. The law can be summed up, as you know, it is summed up in many places in the Bible, as loving God and loving your neighbour. And that's Paul's point then, that although some may balk at the law of God, some may see the law as an intolerable burden, the moral law, the Ten Commandments, in the end, it's really only asking us to love one another. That's all the law is saying, isn't it? The Ten Commandments are saying, well, you've got to love God. You can't do anything unless you love God, and you've got to love one another. And nobody can reasonably object to that. You know, on the Day of Judgment, when we stand before God, nobody is going to be able to say to God, and you wanted us to love each other. What sort of God is that? Who wants us all to love one another and help one another and be kind to one another? What a tyrant of a God he must be. It's ridiculous, isn't it? There's nothing unreasonable about it at all. It's difficult, of course. Once we get to know one another, we know how difficult some days it is to love one another. But it's not an unreasonable thing. God himself is love, we're told in the Bible, aren't we? Not just that God has this characteristic of love, but that he is love. That's the chief characteristic of God. The most outstanding thing about God is that he is love. And he expects us, his creatures, to be loving and to be kind also. To love him, of course. We must love God who made us. And also then to love our fellow man as well. Now, as you know, Christians don't entirely agree on what exactly they make of the law. Is the Christian under the law? Well, yes, but in what sense is he under the law? And I don't want to go into that question this evening, but it is clear, isn't it, that Paul expects Christians to fulfill the law. And it is also clear that he sees love, this genuine feeling of indebtedness towards others, this sense of duty as the key to fulfilling the law. I think it's also clear, isn't it, that law and love are not opposed to each other. You know, you talk to some people and they're quite sceptical, aren't they, about marriage. They think, well, if they get married legally, well, how can they really love one another? You know, how can you love somebody you're obliged legally to live with anyway because you've entered into a contract with them? But that is to misunderstand. Love and marriage, there's a song, isn't there? Love and marriage, they do go together. Like a horse and carriage, I think is the line. They do go together. They're two different things. We mustn't confuse the law concerning marriages and love. They're not the same things. You can go through a ceremony of marriage, and that won't make you love a person. You can love a person, even though you've never been through a marriage ceremony with them. They are two different things, but they go together. They go together. They fit together. And the law of God, the Ten Commandments, and a true love then for your fellow men, that is something that fits together very well indeed. So do you see it? If you say to me now tonight, I'm a Christian, I've put my trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. Do you see it as your duty to fulfill the law? Because you should do. You should see the Ten Commandments. Now, that's the way you're going to be saved. We know that, don't we? We're not saved by keeping the Ten Commandments. We can't keep the Ten Commandments anyway. We're saved by putting our trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. But if we really do trust in him, then we'll want to obey the law. We want to do what the law says. And do you see then that genuine love is the key to doing that? If there's a genuine love in us, then we won't find the commandments a burden. So that's something for us to learn this evening then. So that's the second thing, isn't it? The importance of love one to the other. And then thirdly, hear what the commandments say and obey them. So that's the third thing then. Hear what the commandments say and obey them. Paul goes on to speak about some specific commands. He doesn't list all 10 of the commandments, although it's pretty obvious, isn't it, that he's thinking about all the 10 commandments. And what he does is he mentions 4. You'll get some Bibles that have got 5 in there, but I think that's just a little mistake that's crept in at some point. There are 4 commandments that he mentions. They're from the last 6, the 6 that come in the second table of the law, as we sometimes call it. And I think it's understandable that he turns to those particular laws because he's talking about loving your neighbour. And you know, you can divide the commandments up, can't you? The first 4 are really about our love to God. about putting God first, not having idols, not misusing God's name, and then setting aside that special time each week to the Lord. And then the other six are really more about our relationship with our neighbour. And Paul varies the order just slightly. He puts "do not commit adultery" first. I don't know if there's any significance in that. It may be that he was thinking of people, you know, sometimes people, they excuse adultery by saying it's love, isn't it? They say, well, it's not really adultery. I just fell in love with this other person. And yes, I know the marriage fell apart because of that, but I couldn't help myself. I was just in love. That's the way they might say it. They might take a phrase like, he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law. They might excuse their adultery. They might say that they did it for love. But the commandment against adultery is very clear then. And despite what many say, it is a wicked and an evil sin. Let's be in no doubt about that. You see it, don't you, in our society. It's quite common, sadly, adultery. We've been aware of it over the summer, not directly, but indirectly, knowing situations where, in both cases, a man has committed adultery. And that's just spoiled and marred and messed up so much. You know, if you really love your husband, if you really love your wife, then you're not going to leave them, are you? You may find it a little difficult at times with them. There may be issues between you, but you're not going to leave them. You're not going to say, well, I just can't stand living with you anymore. And you're not going to do anything that's going to endanger that relationship. You're not going to commit adultery behind their backs. If you really love somebody and you're married to them, then you'll stay with them. And if you know somebody else and they're married to somebody, you're not going to drag them away from that that marriage. If you really love them, you're not going to drag them away and cause heartache for them, for their spouse, any children who are involved. They're going to be torn apart. They're going to spend their days growing up, moving from one house to another house, from one house to another house, as so many children have to do in our society today. You're not going to do that if there's a genuine love in your heart for anybody involved. You'll get out of there. You'll run. You'll put your running shoes on and you'll run. You'll go and move to another place rather than to endanger that marriage. I suppose do not murder, do not steal are more obvious, aren't they? To unlawfully kill somebody, it's not an act of love, is it? Stealing cannot be thought of as an act of love. These sins break the commandments, and they're not acts of love at all. And even coveting is a failure to love, isn't it? I mean, the 10th commandment is different to the others because it's about what goes on in your mind. It's not something you actually do. And I think it's the clue there that all the other commandments must be considered. You know, when it says don't steal, it doesn't just mean don't steal. It means don't even think about stealing. When it says don't murder, it means don't hate. Don't even take the first tiny step on the road that leads to murder. And coveting then, although it's not so easily detected as other sins, it is still a failure to love your neighbour. If you had a friend and you knew then somehow that every time you won something or gained something or got something, there was jealousy and there was envy in their hearts, and they were filled with horrible thoughts towards you because you were getting this good thing and that good thing, and they envied. That would be a horrible thing to know, wouldn't it? And that would be a terrible sin to perpetrate against a neighbour. So Paul mentions these four commandments, and he writes, he says, and whatever other commandment there may be, which would include, of course, disobeying your parents, to disobey or to dishonour your parents, or to bear false witness. That's the other one he doesn't mention from the second table. They are great sins also. No parent wants their child to disobey. Nobody in authority wants the person under them to rebel and to cause them trouble. Nobody wants his neighbour to tell him lies. Nobody wants to be in the position where he's saying, well, is that true what he just told me, or is that not true? Nobody wants to be in that position. And it may be that there are other commandments that that are not perhaps specifically covered in the Ten Commandments, but all of them then, whatever command there is, they can all be brought together. The first four commandments, they don't apply in the same way, but even with those then, you can see that a disobedient person is an unloving person. And if they won't obey the first four commandments, well, you can be sure that they won't obey the second six commandments either. There's not a man who's ever lived who stuck by the six commandments, honouring their parents and not stealing or committing adultery and so on, but they haven't followed the four commandments. It doesn't happen. People talk about it. People say it. But you check, you look. It never happens. If they don't attempt to keep the first four, they won't keep the second six. And so as a Christian then, we must be determined to obey the commandments. We know that we cannot do it. We can't keep the Lord's Day the way that the Lord's Day is really to be kept. We can't go through life and never speak the name of God without failing in one way or another to speak with the reverence that we ought to. We sin in many ways. But we're aiming to keep the commandments. And so we're aiming to love our fellow man. And to disobey the commandments is to fail to love our neighbours in the way that we should. So that's the third thing. Hear what the commandments say and obey them. And then the fourth and the final thing is this. See that obeying the commandments, it's a matter of loving your neighbour. I know Paul's saying the same thing three times over, really, isn't he? But let's just pursue it a little bit further. It's a matter of loving your neighbour. See, Paul says these various commands, they're summed up in this one rule. Love your neighbour as yourself. If you can't remember the Ten Commandments, don't worry. Just remember this, Leviticus 19:18. Love your neighbour as yourself. Love does no harm to its neighbour, and therefore love is the fulfilment of the law. So we begin then with loving ourselves, isn't it? Love your neighbour as yourself. Now some people have suggested that our real problem is that we don't love ourselves enough. You can see the argument, can't you? How can you love your neighbour if you don't love yourself? Now there may be some few cases where a person doesn't really love himself, but really, most of us have got a pretty good idea about how to love ourselves. We don't find it very difficult at all. We get to a certain age and we wash ourselves and we dress ourselves and we feed ourselves. And if there's anything that we need to make ourselves comfortable, we make sure that it is provided. If you find you're standing under a drip, you move out of the way because you don't want the drip to be falling on you all the time. If you see something coming towards you that looks like it's going to hurt, you instinctively close your eyes. You instinctively put your hands up to make sure it doesn't. It's not something you have to be taught as such. I think there's a little bit of teaching, one or two things. Children can endanger themselves, can't they? There's a little bit of teaching, but we get it pretty soon. We get it pretty quickly. And it is instinctive then. Now, what the Bible tells us is that just as we love ourselves, so we are to love our neighbours. You are to love your neighbour as you love yourself. Just as you've got this instinct then to make sure that you eat properly, that you've got something to wear, that you keep warm or cool, whichever is appropriate, that you provide for yourself. You've got a roof over your head. Just as you instinctively do that for yourself, so you must do it for others. It's sometimes called the golden rule, isn't it? Do to others as you would have them do to you. Do to others as you would have them do to you. And love is marked then by an unwillingness to do any harm to its neighbours. And so just as we can spend any amount of time on ourselves then, thinking about how we can best help ourselves, how we can improve ourselves. I mean, it's not difficult, is it? Yeah, I could spend hours just thinking about, what can I do this for myself? What can I do that for myself? Well, just as we can easily spend hours on something like that, so we must spend time also thinking, and not just thinking, of course, but doing what will help other people. what we can do to help other people, what we can do to improve other people as well. And if there was more of this love about, I think there would be a lot less sin in the world. I suppose if you push this, you might find some sins that lie outside this circle. I suppose the obvious one is if somebody stole to feed his family, that would be understandable, but still a sin. And I don't think Paul is saying that you can ram absolutely everything into this category, but most things will fit into this category. And if there was more of that love, then this world would be a much less wicked and a much less unpleasant place, and the law would be practically fulfilled. The Beatles, as you know, were an enormously successful group in the 60s, and they sang about lots of things, but very often they were singing about love, or love, as they used to be. It's spelled L-U-V, I think that's how you pronounce it, love. She loves you, love me do, can't buy me love, P.S. I love you, and so on, and so on, and so on. All you need is love, I suppose, is the most famous one. I looked at the lyrics of that. It doesn't really say any more than all you need is love, which is a good start, but a less familiar song is this one. You might know this one. It's called The Word Is Love. So say the word and you'll be free. Say the word and be like me. Say the word I'm thinking of. Have you heard what's the word he's thinking of? It's love. It's a fine, it's sunshine, it's the word love. In the beginning I misunderstood, but now I've got it. The word is good. Spread the word and you'll be free. It's very evangelistic. Spread the word and you'll be free. Spread the word I'm thinking of. Have you heard the word is love? Say the word and you'll be free. Say the word and be like me. Say the word I'm thinking of. Have you heard the word is love? Now that I know what I feel must be right, I'm here to show everybody the light. So, you know, the idea of shining the light. Give the word a chance to say that the word is just the way. It's the word I'm thinking of, and the only word is love. Now, I think that's a step forward, isn't it? It doesn't say very much, but it's a step forward. If you can see that much, what does he say? In the good and the... have I lost that line somewhere? In the good and the bad books that I have read. Oh, there it is. Everywhere I go, I hear it said, in the good and the bad books that I've read, the word is love. So they've got that far. Now, of course, what they don't do is to define it. They don't explain to you. When you say all you need is love, yeah, but what exactly do you mean by love? When you say the word is love, how does that work out practically? And of course, that's where the whole philosophy begins to fall down. Now, the Apostle Paul, I wrote Paul originally, but I thought you might be confused if I just said Paul. The Apostle Paul makes some definitions. He sets out very clearly for us what he means when he says, all you need is love. When he says the word I'm thinking of is love. He says here, doesn't he? He says, he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the law, which is very similar to saying that to love your fellow man is to fulfill the law. That's what it's involved. How do I fulfill the law? You love. Love is fulfilling the law. He says that the commandments, don't commit adultery, don't murder, don't steal, don't covet, and whatever other commandments there may be, are summed up in this one rule, love your neighbour as yourself, which is really the same as saying to love your neighbour as yourself. That means to say that you won't commit adultery. That means to say that you won't murder, or even begin on the steps that lead to murder, hatred and so on. You won't steal, you won't covet. And whatever other commandment there is, you won't do it, because you know that that is not to love your fellow man. And finally, he says, love does no harm to its neighbour. Therefore, love is the fulfilment of the law, which is, again, a very similar way of saying that fulfilling the law is love. And love does no harm to its neighbour. Now, as we said, the law won't save anybody. Let's be clear about that. The law won't save anybody. There's only one way to be saved, and that's by trusting in Jesus Christ, the one who literally fulfilled the law and did all that needed to be done. However, the law is a good guide for us. And if we want to live lives of love, as we should in the Lord Jesus Christ, then we can make use, we must make use of the law, because the law shows us how to love our neighbours as ourselves. There's an outstanding debt that we must all repay, and the debt is love.